Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
Welcome to Fashion Faux Pas of the 70s.
Yeah, so I was just related to Budgie how myself and Michael, Mickey D, and Bob, you can guess who those people might be.
Roberto Smitherinos.
Yes, bought these high-waisted three-button pants and platforms. And I bought my pair of platforms from a store in Brighton on the South Coast. And as soon as I stepped out of the store, I fell down the steps coming into the store because I was like a giraffe on stilts. So I've got no way to walk in these bloody things. How about you, Budge? What was your favorite T-shirt and stuff?
Oh, yes, the favorite T-shirt. Because we were talking about split-knee loons and my outfit. I got tickets to see Mark Bolan performing with T-Rex at Belvedere.
Well, you're lucky. I never saw him. I wish I had seen
him. Well, I'll tell you about the concert. But first, let me tell you about getting there and what I was wearing. I'd saved up. I'd got a wine-colored satin jacket. Like, there was no lining, so it's very thin. And underneath was a purple scoop neck shirt, long sleeved. And of course, you got it in one. The sleeves ended in the kind of bell shape. Everything was flat.
What was that for? Do you remember what the bell was for, or was it just to look cool?
I have no idea. Everything was flat.
Yeah.
I loved it when you said the loons had to meet, they had to come over the top of your shoes.
Oh, yeah.
So that it looked like you were wearing a kind of like large skirt on each leg.
Yes. Yeah, they had to. That was, you know, and they dragged along the floor. So they always got ripped up at the back because you were stepping on them.
I always wanted, because we saw these items of clothing as for sale in the back of the New Musical Express or the Melody Maker or the paper issued at the time. But the models always had this stance where one leg was kind of straight, the other was slightly bent at the knee, and then the crease went out over the front of the shoe, and then the back one finished off at the back heel of the shoe.
Yeah. Right?
The back, as if there's a front heel. There's a back heel and there's no front heel. But so you had to stand in this position for the loons to look.
To get the look, yeah. I mean, it was really kind of absurd, but, you know, most fashion is, I suppose. Really.
And how old were we? How old were we?
14, 15,
isn't
I think.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. 14, 15, fashion victims.
Oh, yeah. Pearl had the satin jacket like yourself. And he also had these pair of shoes called Rooster Boosters, which he loved, which were basically some Andean shoe that, you know, had straps and buckles and things and sort of wrapped around your ankle so you could look like you were, you know, walking through the Andes and stuff. You know, multicolored. And
the number of times I went to Liverpool, not often, you know, because it was a 10-15 miles away.
Right.
But they had a unisex hair salon.
Oh, yes, I remember them.
A unisex hair salon, you know, where guys and gals could go to the same place and have your hair done. like
get your feather cut.
Yeah, because right. In St. Helens, it was just you either went to the barber, you know, the male right. hairdresser, which we had yeah. Desmond's at the bottom of our street,
right?
With those black and white, greyish photographs of yeah. guys that look like football players of the '70s with a little mustache and a bit of a beard, right. you know.
Yeah.
But because I wanted to get my hair permed into a permanent corkscrew effect like Mark Bolan.
Right.
But I never had the courage.
I never did.
I just kept getting closer and closer to the steps that led in upstairs to the unisex yeah. hair salon, but never got in there.
I started off at the barber, and mine was at the next street over, and he had a book in there that he would hand prospective clients when they came in the door, especially if they were young men about 13 or 14, and the book had two pictures in it. One was Elvis and one was you know, somebody else that was like you know,
George
Robert
Best.
De Niro or something. Yeah, it's one of those people, you know, and he said, okay, you got this hairstyle or that hairstyle, which do you want, this or that? And you know, you just had to pick one, and he'd do sort of rough approximation, and that's what you got.
Whichever photo you picked, you got the same haircut.
Yeah, yeah, it didn't make any difference, really. You just sort of pretended it looked like something different. And then I graduated then to the unisex salon, which was in the next town, you know, and that was very good because I had a blue velvet jacket I could wear in there and feel like I was, you know, I was happening, you know, and sort of sit down there and you'd give me the same sort of feather cut, which didn't work too well on me because I actually had the Mark Bolan curls, like you know, I ain't no square with my corkscrew hair. I had the corkscrew hair, but I didn't like it. I kind of liked it, but I wanted to do something different. You know, you always do.
You wouldn't like it if you had it naturally. Like I knew somebody who did. Yeah. They hated it. Whereas I had to borrow my sister's hairdryer. Which right. is one of those that you sit underneath. But then I'd turn it upside down so it was lying on the floor, blowing upwards, and then put my increasingly growing longer hair into the updraft, and it spiraled it. It spiraled it round. So,
that's a good technique. I never knew that one.
Yeah, I remember that now. But before I could grow my hair long, you know, by the time I'd finished, now what do you call it? Elementary? No, you call it
elementary. Well, it would be primary in Anglaterra.
Well, what was secondary school? High school. So by high school, I couldn't grow my hair long until I was getting near the end of high school. But right. When I first got to high school, I had to get my hair cut because it was a feather cut and it was too long, apparently.
Right.
So me and a couple of other guys went out and we said, right, we're going to get skinhead.
All right. Do you have a number one or a number two? Which one did you have?
We went, I think I was supposed to get a number two, but I think he got it wrong. And I came out with a number one and I couldn't figure out which side to put the parting on because it was a shaved parting.
Right.
So I got two. I got one either side.
All right.
He demonstrates.
Like a mohawk. Like
well, a sort it was, no, because there was no hair. It was just a shaved head with shaved partings.
A shave hawk.
Shave hawk. And then I put a little woolly, you know, skull cap on, little bob, like we call them, beanie thing, and walked up the street because it was only at the bottom of our street, walked back up the hill to the house and went in the house with a hat on, you know, with a woolly hat. And I never wore a wool hat in the house, you know, ever before. So everybody's just looking at me. And
everybody guessed straight away, right? You've done something to your hair.
Well, go on, take the hat off. I just pull the hat. Oh, what have you done? So I went to school the next day, sent home. Yes.
Really? All right, for having the skinhead.
Yeah, you couldn't win, your hair was too long or too short.
My hair went from the sort of, you know, pre-Raphaelite Mark Bolan-y look. Eventually, by the end of high school, and when I got out and went to college, it was more like Larry Wallace from the Pink Fairies. You know, it was like this big afro thing coming out. You know, which was kind of cool for a while.
Well, I would have been envious. I would have been envious of that. And then as soon as I got to a Liverpool Poly, and I got to college. Yeah. It was great because you knew who was new from like small town England. Coming to big city for the first time. Not that Liverpool was a very big city, but it was big enough.
Oh, it's pretty big, yeah.
And the first thing that happened was all the first years, eventually we dropped. It was like watching, you know, being gunned down. We dropped, like, so the hair came off. And
right.
Mine, at that point, I just wanted to be like, I think it was a cross between Francis Bacon or Brian Ferry. Of course, right. Brian Ferry was short, but it was black.
Yeah. Yes.
So within a few weeks of being there, I'd cut all my long locks off to a very normal, like, short back and sides, a bit kind of like a kind of army cut.
Yeah.
And then dyed it black.
Yeah. And did you have, I have to ask this question, did you have the jelly sandals with that? Because they were popular for that summer. I think everybody who looked like Brian Ferry-ish or whatever had the jelly sandals and the pegs, the pants, you know, with the little pleats at the top.
Yes. Yes.
God, I didn't really, wow. We had this, exactly the same fashion faux pas, you and I.
The jelly, the white plastic little open-toed sandals. You had to be careful what color socks you were wearing. I think I was looking for a pair of cricket pants because they were the only like light colored trousers that were kind of classic cut.
Yeah.
And I went to Pips Disco in Manchester.
Oh, my God. I've been to Pips. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And Pips at that point was just getting, like, we had a Bowie room, a Roxy room, a T-Rex room. And unbeknownst to me, a Gary Numan room was about to happen.
Really?
I can't. Wow. It must have been later. I must have gone back there because I think chronologically that doesn't work, does it?
No, Gary was a bit later on.
I think I must have imagined that. Like, I must have added that onto my Pips experience. Or I went back there when the band was on tour much later, you know, when I got into a band eventually. Because all this is pre-band days for me. It's way before, you know, getting into the first band.
So somewhere at about that point, you know, we were like, you know, self-admitted fashion victims a little bit at that point, but then somewhere at that point we all got a little bit of identity, because I can remember Michael started to have these t-shirts that came halfway up his abdomen, you know, so he you know, he was a young man, so he had a nice slim flat six-pack, you know, and so it looked kind of cool. And that was, he had this sort of Del Brommon hair coming down here. There's a guy, a guitarist in Stray, who used to play with his little frilly shirts on over the top of his, you know, t-shirt. So Michael sort of adopted that look. I bought this old jacket from Jumble Sale, which is garage sale here in America. And I dyed it sort of a bright pinky purpley color, and then I wrote with a pen on the side of it. Oh, I ripped it up a little bit and put it back together with some safety pins, and then I put "No change." I wrote "no change" on it in big letters, you know, so I thought it looked pretty punky. And Robert found an old fur coat that was like full length. So he looked like, you know, something out of a 1930s movie, a full length fur coat that went all the way down to his feet, and wore that around with like Converse underneath it and stuff. So,
you know, goodness. I dug out an old fur coat. My grandmother's, I think. It wasn't full length, but I wore that around St. Helens for a little while. And I wasn't the only one either. There was another guy that had long hair as well. But by the time I got to Liverpool, it was getting more like straight leg Levi's and then slightly skinnier until they got really tight. And then they were my jeans were tight enough to get a big chunky white pair of white fisherman socks, like thick wool,
came out
the top of the DMs.
Very good look. I'd persuaded my mother, because I had, you know, the flared Levi's, because of course we all did. So I had a flared 501s, and I managed to persuade my mum, okay, cut a bit out of the, you know, the side of it and make them into straight leg pants for me. And she did. And it was good. Of course, I think probably earlier on, when I would get, you know, a pair of normal 501s before flares came in, I probably got her to put an insert to make them flares in the other pair, you know.
You know, I was looking back because I keep seeing these early photographs of like Julian Cope and Ian McCulloch from like Liverpool bands, Echo and the Bunnymen, Teardrop Explodes. Yeah. And I think it's like quite often, I think certainly the guitarists always had duffel coats on.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that I had a duffel coat when I got to, you know, the art college in Liverpool, and it was at that point it wasn't anything that was in the like in fashion. It was the stuff you got in the Army and Navy store, you know, the kind of army surplus. Yeah,
right.
It was all like very functional, very normal. And yet, it was really how you accessorized. My hair by this point was bleached, you know, as white as I could get it. So it was all about the hair, really. And
nobody could sort of confuse us for, you know, people who are about to go in the army or the navy wearing this stuff. No, they wouldn't confuse us for that. No.
Because at that point, I think Holly was around and he had a shaved head and shaved eyebrows. Pete Griffiths was the bass player with the Spitfire Boys. He had dyed black hair, no eyebrows. And he had big skull. Paul Rutherford was teasing his hair back, like Ariana from the Slits.
Right.
And he had broken teeth, like better than John Rotten.
wow.
I think everybody was finding their own little look, and yet together we felt safe.
Yeah, I mean, I could have walked into your scene in Liverpool back then and thought, oh, I feel right at home here. Let's sit down and talk. But you know, that had to wait a few years. But
did you then find out the kind of certainly for us, Manchester was just down the road. It was about 20-30 miles away. And the Manchester look was quite different.
Yeah.
It was more like when the birthday party arrived over from Australia and they had like the kind of nylon shirts and the stay pressed trousers and the kind of, you know, proper jacket from a suit and maybe a tie that wasn't worn properly. But there was a more kind of like, again, it's kind of, what is that look? It's kind of nerdy.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, there was a little bit of that going on. I mean, we would go down to either Brighton, where it was sort of things were slowly starting to happen. Brighton being a bit more of an arty kind of place that we lived in. And then we would go up to London and start to see things. So we started to go to some of the early punk gigs, you know, we'd see people sort of all dressed up in, you know, bondage pants and stuff, which was, you know, you couldn't buy a pair of bondage strides in Crawley for love nor money. So
if you could, would you have bought them?
If I could, I would have bought them. I would have worn them on the down the high street and probably got chased by some skinheads. But you know,
it's funny who did buy them. Pete Burns. Pete Burns had the first pair. Pete had a little shop in Matthew Street. You know,
yes,
and he went down to London. Could afford to come back, dressed in Vivian Westwood McLaren's bondage outfit, trousers, you know, with the bum pad on the back, the bum flap,
and
the full jacket with all the belts and everything.
Yeah,
and Paul Rutherford, he was so jealous.
I bet.
But I'm not sure I would have liked. I was already like. Move pulling away from any new kind of uniform.
Well, for me and Robert and Michael, to a certain extent, there wasn't anybody like us in our town, so we were like the, for want of a better phrase, the flag bearers for it. So we could actually introduce people to that. Oh yes, this is what you know you can wear. And
but you I know you really took a shine to when the Clash had the first album. But I don't recall wanting to look like the Clash. I didn't want to go out and paint my clothes or anything.
Well, I didn't want to go out and paint my clothes, but I like the slogans on the side, which is where the No Change jacket came from. But it was kind of small. It was like small typeface. It wasn't like a big shouty, you know, No Change scrawled on the back. It was like you had to look closely to see it. But I accessorized it with homemade badges that I'd made. And Bob used to make some homemade badges as well. You know,
so, I see. The thing I really liked was what I saw Rotten and Steve Jones, the Sex Pistols. They had these mohair jumpers. Mohair seemed to have found a new niche.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So... My mother was an avid knitter. And, you know, she used to make me things when I was about 12 or 13 that I would wear once, walk down the street, take them off, put them in my school bag and take out the shirt I liked and put that on, you know, just to make her happy and that. But we kind of bonded over the mohair jumper because I saw, I was walking past the you know, the knitting store in town, because of course there was always a knitting store, and I saw a pattern, you know, because you had to buy patterns, with this young guy with a rather sort of punky looking black mohair jumper. So I got home, rushed home, breathless, told mum, "You want to knit me a jumper?" And she looked at me a little aghast, like, you never want, you take them off when you go out. I know you do. And
suddenly she had a use. She could connect. She had a use.
Yeah, and she made me the most beautiful black mohair jumper. I had to persuade her though that, like, you know, some of the stitching wasn't going to be that tight, you know, we had to pull it apart a little bit, and she's like, "Why do you want to do that? It doesn't look neat." And I said, "That's the idea." Yeah, you know,
a little distress going on.
Yeah, and I wore that thing for ages. It was my favorite.
I know, because it felt so comfortable and secure.
And it was warm. It was really warm.
Yes, because it was grim. It was cold, yes, wasn't
it? Cold and bleak.
76 may have been the hottest summer on record, but we were still getting cold winters.
Cold, miserable winters. And you had to wear your mohair jumper with the old rain mac over the top.
Yep, we were cold little punkies, weren't we?
Yes. Thank God I got rid of the jelly sandals by that time. I got creepers. I got a pair of creepers, and the creepers were good because they keep you out of the mud and the sludge, you know. So
The jelly sandals were. I'm afraid I lived in Doc Martin's boots for a long time after that.
Yeah,
until I got to the Americas. The Americas were waiting.
Yeah. Curious Creatures is created and presented by Vol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Spare.
Social media, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas K.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
I love saying www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com. And you can reach us on Instagram, Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cure Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram and at doubleelvisfm on Twitter. Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2021.